Calgary Show Services presents the Event Planning Podcast, featuring interviews with industry professionals to help you produce your next event.
So I'm here today with Carrie McManus from Suggest, and we're just looking to speak to her about her experience in event planning and her annual event specifically. Maybe tell me a bit about Suggest and your event.
Absolutely. So Suggest is a community-based not-for-profit that works to empower individuals, organizations, and communities to break the cycle of domestic violence. And we've been doing that for over 30 years now. And we do three different program streams. We do direct service, capacity building, and education and advocacy. And we, for the past 6 years, have been running an annual event called Eat, Play, Love. And it's a Sunday afternoon of indulgence is what we call it, where people get to come together. We have great food. We have great wine. We have great spa services. So everyone gets a half hour of free spa service. We have great auction items. And it's really just a fun afternoon for people to come together and hang out with friends and family and support a great organization.
And how did you get involved in working the event with Suggest?
So I personally got involved because I have a history of event management. And so when my executive director heard that her program manager had been doing this before, she said, "Ooh, you should do this with us." But as a small organization, it's a very all hands on deck kind of thing. So everyone has a role to play because we have a small staff. So everybody pitches in and helps out to get the event off the ground.
And then what makes up the funding aside from the auction? Is it ticket sales? And that is that basically it?
Yeah. So we have sort of three funding options within it. We do sponsorship. So we have individuals and organizations that will give different levels of sponsorship and then receive access to the event, promotion of their organization within event materials. We have ticket sales. I mean, the ticket sales really is about covering costs of the venue and our expenses for anything else that we're doing. And then the auction items, and that's sort of where the bulk of the flexible money comes out of, is the auction item and the sponsorship itself.
So how do you approach various companies for auction items?
So we do a bit of a big scope for that. So we talk to essentially anyone and everyone and ask if they would be willing to donate. We go in with a formal letter explaining who we are, why specifically you should donate to us, because we know that most people get asked for lots of things from lots of different organizations. Especially now in the economic downturn, that's become harder to go to. And so we do a big ask. We also look at, as an organization, we look at, do we have auction items that every single staff person sitting around the table would want to bid on? Because we want to have diverse auction items, and we want to have auction items that fit within lots of different economic categories. So not everybody is going to be able to bid on a weekend away in Banff, but people might be able to bid on, you know, a pottery class here in the city or something like that. So we really want to have diversity in prices and diversity in product so that we aren't just meeting the needs of one group of people that come to the event, but that anybody coming to the event would have at least one thing that they think, ooh, I need to walk away with that product.
And what about the venue costs themselves? Are there any costs associated with it that some people might not consider?
There's tons. So we, as a not-for-profit, always try to make sure that we use that to leverage any venue that we're in and get a discounted space. Most spaces will offer a not-for-profit discount, but they may not offer that unless you ask for it. And so we're always very sure to ask for it. And then lots of spaces, you get a space for the venue cost, and that's about it. Everything that you add on is on top of that. And so we look at things like, instead of having a coat check room set up and someone to work that, we say, can you take your coat hangers and put them in the lobby because that's free? Or instead of having them do all of the signage and put that up and it costs us more, we do that. Or instead of having a venue come in and do, you know, anything sort of specific where they would have to go to somebody else, rent it, and then bring it in and then charge us an upcharge on that, we say, no, we'll go to that person ourselves and get that product because then we can get it for a cheaper price next year.
What about the endless email stream that must occur? What I found just in my experience is that you'll end up with, you know, 26 emails from someone in one small regard to an event, and then another person, you know, 35 emails or something. And a lot of people talking back and forth and CCing and forwarding. And then if it's not all documented in one central area, you end up having to go back and read over everything to make sure that everyone's doing what they say they did, or things might have changed, you know, within a couple of weeks of the event, and then accounting and does this person know about that change and this kind of thing. So can you recommend any method to keep all of those, all the email mayhem organized?
Yeah. So I think we have two things that we do. So one, we have one core email for our event. So multiple people can sign into it to look at and to send and receive things. But we have one place where it all goes. And I think that's helpful because it means that our financial person is not sending emails separate of our event planner or of myself who does some of the organizing pieces. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is that we have invested in one main event person, and whether that's an external person or an internal person, I don't think it matters, but you need to have somebody who ultimately is in charge, and they need to know that they're ultimately in charge of all of those pieces, so that if something happens the week before and it has an implication for the day of the person who's organizing all of the day of stuff, it has an implication for the person who's paying the invoices, there has to be that one person that can say, this is going to impact the invoices, so I'm going to make sure that I forward it to that person as well.
What about the scope of the event itself when you are planning? How do you kind of limit it and also keep a theme without taking on too much on your plate?
So I think for us and for me in particular, I'm a big fan of keeping it simple. And so for us, we do very simple decor. We do very simple space as part of recognizing that I don't need to have 7,000 different decor items in a space to make it nice. But I think also you have to be willing to recognize what are you able to do and what are you not able to do? So even if we decided we could sell 500 tickets to our event, we don't have the capacity to plan an event for 500 people. And so we are really clear about what's our max capacity that we can handle and then be willing to draw the line. And I think that what happens often in event planning is we think we can do all of it. And we say, let's just do all of it. And what I have found is that when you try to do all of it, you lose many pieces off of everything. Whereas if you say, we're going to do this, we're going to do these three things, and we're going to do them really well, in my experience, that event is going to be much more successful and have a much greater impact on the people who are attending because you've done those pieces really well. They're never going to know that you could have done seven other pieces. They're just going to know that the three that were there and were present were really well done and they really appreciated it.
Ooh, this all sounds very good. It seems like you're doing it in the right way. What about working with a venue when, I know you know how many tickets you have sold beforehand, but I imagine that there's a certain amount of flexibility in the attendees. So how do you coordinate in regards to food and drink with the venue? Is there a flat rate that the venue will expect? And then to what extent would they be able to accommodate many ticket sales at the last minute kind of thing?
So I think that whenever you're working with a venue, it's really important to have these conversations long before the event date. And so as soon as you book a venue, and for us, as soon as we've selected our venue, we say to them, this is what we're looking at. This is what we think we're going to get for numbers. We're going to know at, a month out, we're going to have this idea, but at a week out, we're going to have this idea. And to say to them right away, what are your actual requirements? So venues will say, this is what we need. And I always ask, is that what you need or is that what you want? So you might want to know what my numbers are 2 weeks out, but what does your kitchen actually need? And most kitchens actually only need a week's notice for food, or sometimes even 3 days. So I think it's really important to ask those questions as soon as you start working with a venue to make sure that you know that information. You don't get caught by a day or two because you expected 200 people and you're only going to have 100 and they say, no, sorry, you needed to confirm last week. So I think we ask lots of questions. We also are willing to, and this might come because I've done this for a while, or it might just be who we are and who I am. I'm willing to push that with a venue. And if a venue says to me, I need a month out for you to have a floor plan that says this is exactly where things are going to go, I'm willing to say to a venue, that's not realistic. I can't do that. I can give you the best guess that I can, but I'm going to need to have staff there on the day of that are prepared to move tables around a little bit if we get a big auction item and we need to be able to set up the space differently. So I think working with the venue, recognizing the value that the venue has, recognizing that they have structures in place that help them to be able to do this work and to do, you know, many different events over the course of one weekend, but also being willing to say to them, I'm your customer and I need you to do what I need you to do for my event and not worry about sort of the impact outside of that.
What about budgeting? when you plan the event the first year, how do you project how many people are going to come? What kind of money is going to be raised? It seems like it's easy to estimate the costs, or you know, you'll know what the costs are, but how do you predict the gain?
So I think for us, it's really important to always under budget or under assume. So we always look at assuming that we're going to have less coming in ticket sales and in sponsorship and in auction than what we would like. And so in our first year, I think we would want to sort of chat with other people, look at what is our capacity. And I think, again, this comes back to a capacity issue of saying in our first year, we're going to plan to have an event for 50 people. We're not going to plan to have an event for 500 people because you're not going to have 500 people come in the first year. And so we plan low. We test it out. We see how much we make off of those things. And then we say, okay, so if we expanded by 100 tickets, what's the additional cost and what's the additional revenue? But I think for the first year, it's about creating something that is controllable so that you don't, if you go too big, you end up losing a bunch of money. And you also end up with people who were there who it's not actually the event that you want it to be. And so then you lose a little bit of credibility in terms of the event and what you're doing. Whereas if you can start a little bit more controlled and recognize what you can do, people are going to really enjoy it and then you can grow. And I think it's always better to grow bigger than to have to grow smaller because you overshot in the first place.
I think maybe what happens sometimes is there could be a disconnect between the amount of money spent in certain places. Like sometimes if people are trying to plan more of a music oriented event, they will have a certain amount of budget for the talent and they might try to bring in lesser known acts who aren't charging as much for the entertainment, but then they're not able to get the draw that they wanted because nobody wants to see the acts that don't charge any money basically. And I could see that happening in an event like yours as well. Like if you have, you know, you could get silk table runners and $160 centerpieces and all of these things that are kind of frivolities, but
yeah,
maybe they would be beneficial for a certain type of attendee. So I think there's a way to figure out whether that seems a little bit ambivalent, like which way to find go. Out, you know, where to put it. And
yeah, I think you need to know your audience. And so for us, we make sure that we have really good food and lots of it. And that's important because we know our audience and we know that even though we plan it for an afternoon thing and it's not meant to be a meal based, we know that they're going to come hungry and they're going to want to eat. So we do that. We also know that they want to come and have a nice glass of wine. They don't want to have a cheap glass of wine. They want to have a nice glass of wine. And so we invest in things like that because we know that people are going to pay our ticket price if they know that they can come in and have good food and a nice glass of wine. If that's not what your audience cares about, then you shouldn't spend your money there. Our audience doesn't care about whether I have a $160 centerpiece or whether I spend $5 at Costco on flowers and throw them into a glass in the middle of the table. So I don't spend $150 on a centerpiece because it doesn't add value for us, whereas wine adds value. The spa services that we have and the diversity of those add value. So we spend more time investing in that than we do investing in other pieces. But I think it's about recognizing your audience and recognizing what's the value of each of those pieces. And also with event planning, recognizing that you, again, this I think comes back to the you can't do it all. So you can't manage all of these pieces. So what are the pieces that you're going to concentrate on? And are you going to concentrate on having a big name act come in because it's going to draw people? Or are you going to concentrate on growing smaller name acts, right? It's about what, and it's not a right or wrong. It's just about saying, who are the people we want to get in the door? And how are we going to do that?
So what are some of the things that Suggests uses the money towards from this event?
So the great thing about this event is that it is unrestricted funds, which means that we can use it to whatever we need to in order to fill the holes within our budget. And so often within our budget, holes fall from a programmatic level. So we may receive funds from a funder, from a government funder to run our LGBTQ domestic violence program, but they won't fund fully that program. And so we use these funds help to cover those costs for program development or program delivery that funders are not fully covering.
And if people wanted to learn more about Sagess, where can they go?
You can go to our website, which is www.sagesse.org.
Last question. If you're stranded on a desert island and you could only have one meal every day for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I've actually had this conversation with people before, so I know that it is barbecued chicken, mashed potatoes, and green beans.
Seems straightforward. Right on. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you.
And all the best with the event this year.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening. This podcast was produced by Andrew Spencer and Chris Benoit. Please join us in 1 month for the next event planning podcast. You can also visit us online at calgaryshowservices.com to join our monthly newsletter for inventory updates and event insights.